We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. What's good, everybody? It's our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're headed down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Jess Hilarious, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club, and we got a special guest in the building.
The legendary
Jasmine Guy. Welcome back.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning.
How you feeling?
I feel great. I love doing your show the last time, and I got a lot of positive feedback.
People love you.
Yeah.
Come on.
It was a different kind of interview, though, than they're used to. And my daddy was like, you were a little too comfortable. You act like they were at your house.
No, that was like, that champagne, right?
Yes, that cheap-ass champagne, whatever that was. I didn't even like it. I was drinking it. Mm-hmm. But my father said that you would put more in when I was looking at Kadeem.
No, that's
what he said.
I don't think
he said whenever you looked at Kadeem, he poured more in there. So I'm thinking I'm just drinking one glass. I probably had four glasses. Oh, man,
that cold
you
the, that cold
that Asti Smolanti, whatever that was. I was like, but I drank it anyway at 7 o'clock in the morning. How embarrassing is that?
No, it got you. It got you to talking.
And Kadeem was just sitting back there, just laughing. You know, no, it was good because you ask questions that people don't usually ask. You know, we get the same questions over and over, especially about a different world. I just like that it went into other areas,
absolutely,
of my life and my career and his too. Because anybody can look at any interviews we've done and get those answers. It's the same answer. You know what I mean?
That's right.
So can we talk about something else?
Yeah. That's right.
So you know, or can we bring it to another element that hasn't been explored with us.
Yet. And you've done so much more since
right.
then.
Right. Absolutely.
Know? Like right now, you won your first Emmy this year.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. How did that feel?
She went for the Chronicles of Jessica Wu.
That's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a trip. So I was going to Mexico to hang out with my girlfriends. And I land and I get all these texts from people saying, congratulations on your Emmy nomination. And I really thought people were messing with me.
Wow.
I didn't even call them back. I said, oh, whatever. I wasn't even.
Yeah.
And then when I realized I really had been nominated, I thought it was for the show Harlem.
Okay.
Chronicles of Jessica Wu, I had done two. It was before COVID.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a long time ago, and I only worked on it for a day. It was a very interesting project to me because the production company was a couple, mm-hmm. a small black production company. The superhero in the piece mm-hmm. had autism.
Mm-hmm.
But her powers, that whatever put her on the spectrum, made her a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Their daughter had an autistic child. Anyway, so I said, well, I'll do it because I know after this they're going to need distribution. Mm-hmm. And who knew?
Wow.
That's what, you know what I'm saying?
Wow. Yeah.
My love for them and what I know about, you know, pitching ideas, you're going to need a name. I know,
right.
I've heard it all. And, mm-hmm. and I said, well, I'll be your name. This is going to be good. And it was a short series, like a webisode series.
Mm-hmm.
The other Oscar nomination I got was also from an independent black company, and it was my nephew Emmett, and I played Emmett Till's mm-hmm. aunt on the night that he was taken from their home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, shit, I do not want to go to Mississippi. I mean, I'm telling you, we stayed right down the street from where he got abducted.
Man.
And
Mississippi still got that same energy.
Thank you.
Yeah, nothing to change.
I was going to say I felt mm-hmm. ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I did it, and it got nominated for an Oscar. And when the director called me, he was a graduate student from NYU Film School. His mentors were Spike Lee and Casey Lemons, right? Mm-hmm. Beautiful brother and the crew and everybody. I had a great artistic experience. But when he told me we got nominated for an Oscar, I thought he was messing with me.
That says a lot though, like about how, I guess black actors and actresses are conditioned in Hollywood that when they get told that they're even nominated, they don't believe it.
It's a joke.
Well, when you right. ignored long enough, you get the
yeah.
message.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I got the message.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not nominating A Different World, Debbie Allen, Susan Fales, our wardrobe department, any other actor on that show, I stop focusing on y'all giving me my props.
Mm-hmm.
I know who gives me my props. And I told the actors, I said, we just got to be good. You know, forget all these accolades or whatever. They obviously, do you know how many times they said to me, even on, I think I did Dennis Miller. Remember Dennis
Absolutely.
Miller had a talk show. He started with, so how does it feel being between number one and three?
Mm.
And I was stunned because I just sat down, you come out all cute and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was like, he said that wasn't a good lead-in question. I said, no, it wasn't.
You were talking about Cosby and Cheers?
Everybody said we were number two because okay. we came between them.
Okay. Mm.
And that was the first question.
That was the message. That was the message that we got as actors, as performers, and we never got our props for not just the acting, but it was Debbie Allen, Susan Fales, me, three black women in charge of that show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know what I mean? We could have been on the cover of Essence, and I just knew who really saw us and who really understood us.
Why didn't the network fight for that?
It's the same white motherfuckers that...
Go ahead.
It's okay. It's
you ain't drinking no cold duck today.
That's right. I can't blame you on the cold duck.
You came to the right show. Ooh. See what you want.
I know you can't say that word on TV.
So you can go back in. Same white motherfuckers. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure you don't forget your spot.
It's the same world. Mm-hmm. Just look. Okay, so Carsey Warner, our producers, also produced a show with Whoopi Goldberg called Baghdad Cafe, Grace Under Fire, and The Roseanne Show, and The Cosby Show, right? Mm-hmm. So we're one of five. Mm-hmm. They never asked us to do anything. Mm-hmm. They asked Roseanne Barr to sing the national anthem, in which she grabbed her crotch because she can't sing. Mm-hmm. But we got five singers on our show.
That's crazy. Wow.
You could have had Dawn, me, Cree, you know, yeah. Never. When we got offered things that would have, I don't know. I just got things, we got things on our own, and I never felt a part of that network. Mm. Then when I saw what happened with Friends, I was like, yo, that would have helped us. It would have helped us with work after the show. It would have given us some props, you know, that we could have used for future projects. Mm-hmm. I pitched a lot. I have my own production company after A Different World. All of my projects were rejected. Mm. But then I started to see them. That was weird.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Oh, so they were stealing your ideas.
Mm-hmm. Which ones?
I had a TV idea about a young woman that inherited a sweatshop in the garment district from her gay friend that died of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And but she still saw him as a ghost. I had even talked to RuPaul about being my ghost, you know. Mm-hmm. They was just, everything was a reason not to do it, but then I would see a white girl do it. Mm-hmm. Then I had this idea about what was the name of that spy show? It was a French movie, independent movie. And, La Femme Nikita.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I thought this would be fierce with Robin Givens. So I wrote up a treatment for a pilot version of it. No Robin Givens, but a white American girl doing it. Mm. So I was like, well, I know my ideas are valid, but I just started divorcing myself, like a bad relationship. Mm-hmm. Stop asking for what you know you're not going to get. Mm. I didn't have a parking space like Don Johnson after Miami Vice. You know.
He was a star of the number two show on the network, one of the biggest shows on television. EP. He was a producer on it too, right?
No.
Okay, okay. Oh, I thought you were a producer on it.
No.
But even still, you, a star of that show can't have a parking spot?
I had a parking spot, but he had a production deal is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. After he did Miami Vice, he had a production deal. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know. I just thought that we were ready and well equipped to move on into other areas. I definitely wanted to be a producer because I had met so many people on A Different World, and I wanted to bring this writer with this director, with the, you know, and the ideas that I had were not being done. Mm. The Dorothy Dandridge story, I pitched that for years.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I had to educate first. Who's Dorothy Dandridge? I told him it wasn't condescending, and I didn't want to say the black Marilyn Monroe because that's all they understand is a black version of what we already know.
That's right.
So I don't use that term when I'm pitching. And the movie got done. It just got done without me. Mm. And after a while, I said, okay, I understand. You know what I mean? It's like a bad relationship. After a while, you got to understand, okay, I ain't what you want. Mm-hmm.
So do you
so is all of this and other things, I'm sure, is what leads up to Uncensored, Jasmine Guy? Like,
feel like I did Uncensored because I did Intimate Portrait on Lifetime. Mm-hmm. I did Unsung. But they were in different decades of my life. I mean, Intimate Portrait must have been in my 40s and then 50s. And now I'm in my 60s. And I said I may have a different perspective on my truth. Mm-hmm. Same things happen, but I feel differently about them. I have a different perspective. And I'm not I'm trying not to be so precious about my private life because I really do this when people get like, you know, that's that's mine. I feel like I do enough with my work for the public. That is my gift to the audience. That is my way of communicating. You don't need to know who I'm sleeping with. You, they, their business don't need to be in the street.
You from that era, though. Like, that era was, you didn't really see your favorite celebrity, favorite actress, favorite actor. And when you did, everybody went batshit crazy because you never did. Like, our favorite celebrities growing up as a kid, we didn't know who they dated. Right. We didn't know where they went to eat. We didn't know where they lived. We didn't know any of that. And that was part of the mystique of them being a superstar.
Real celebrity.
But it's also private. I don't feel like, I didn't understand why celebrities would say private things when nobody even asked you.
That cold duck.
That's right.
And some cocaine.
Nope.
Go see Charlemagne. He'll make you talk. I'm like, why you, did nobody ask you that?
Nowadays, I mean, it's crazy.
Nowadays, I, and so with the, oh, and I also got an Instagram. I mean, I've had an account, but my makeup artist said when he went on my social media that it was vintage. Not the V word. That I had not posted. I said, I don't know what to post. I don't know what's interesting. Because work fulfills so many parts of me. If I'm not working, I really don't have nothing to say. What I did today, I colored, I did crossword puzzles.
Well, people are into that. They're into your life outside of just acting. They're into what does Jasmine Guy do? What does she enjoy? What is she like? You know, because we know who you are on
different worlds. But what I like off camera is boring.
But people want to see that. They want to understand that. They want to see what your life's like. If you just sit outside and you knit all day, what are you knitting? Why?
And to be honest,
what calms you down? Because maybe what calms you down will help some calm me down.
Yeah.
Maybe something that you do can help guide me through my life. So people are into what people do.
And now we need some boring shit because, like, everybody's wilding out here. I'm talking about, so I'm interested in what you be knitting. You know what I mean? I want to see that.
I'm working on my next Afghan. No, but it's kind of like that. I like calm. I love my friends. My favorite thing in the world is when my friends come by my apartment. I live in Midtown in Atlanta, so I'm accessible. Because in New York, I used to have an apartment on 78th Street between Columbus and Central Park. Everybody would come through there. If you lived in Queens, if you lived in Jersey, you're going to come by my... And I love that. Yeah. And so... That's one of my favorite things is having my people over. And I've been cooking, too. I've been watching HGTV.
See, people like to see what does Jasmine Guy cook. What's your favorite meal?
Right.
Well, I'm trying to make the perfect chicken wing for me.
Okay.
You don't know how to make chicken wings yet?
No, I've made them. I make them every week.
Okay.
But for me, other people eat them, and they're okay. But I want a certain consistency. I think I'm. I can't get a deep fryer because of my apartment. I can't have it on the patio. So I've tried all different kinds. They're good, and I've done the marinating and everything. Also, I've learned meatballs. I got a good meatball that people like. And
turkey, beef, pork.
It's a it's veal and pork.
Jesus Christ.
No,
she said sorry.
I'll make you some turkey chorizo's pork too. I'll make you some. But I gave an cheesecake. So I'm using my mother's cheesecake recipe and I'm just doing them over and over until I get it
the way you love it.
My daddy is my guinea pig. He has to try all my food and give me notes. Tell me if it's dry. Tell me if, you know. And my friend Jamala loves my cheesecakes. So I made one for the house, gave it to her, and I was like, you know, let me know how it is or whatever. She gave her mother one piece, and she ate the rest of it.
That was good.
Oh, yeah, it must be.
She loves them. She's had three whole cheesecakes.
Jesus. She's probably little, too, isn't
she? Yeah, she's a little bitty thing. I'm like, okay, Jamala, let me tell you what's in this, because you can't. So she wrote a book about her daughter. It's a children's book called Mommy, I Think I Have Diabetes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She found out her daughter has diabetes, but it was from her daughter. This was a true story. Mm-hmm. She made a children's book. And I said, your second book is going to be, Mommy, I think you got diabetes. You keep eating whole cheesecakes.
That's right.
Slow your roll. I'm glad you like them and whatnot, but, right. You know, you can't be eating a whole one.
Yeah.
I got to ask, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, when you do these interviews, people ask the same questions about A Different World. Are you tired of being of talking about A Different World since you had, I mean, that was 30 years ago. But then I see
37.
37, wow. But then I see you on the HBCU tours going from school to school. I see you having those conversations. Are you just done with talking about that part of your life?
I'm not done with that part of my life because people are exploring. They're asking me the same things. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite episode? They want me to see The Wedding Show. That wasn't my favorite episode. Mm-hmm. That's your favorite episode.
Right.
I love when the kids ask questions. Mm-hmm. So we go to these schools. We have a moderator. Mm-hmm. This past, when we did Spelman, Morehouse, and Clark, we had 7 of us. I love that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Usually it's no more than 4 of us. And when the kids get to ask the questions, their questions are different. Mm. They're not asking those same things. I mean, really, you could do your research and know the answer already.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Mm-hmm.
But the kids are like, when you were 19, blah, 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 when you first left home, what did you think about your character? This, I mean, intelligent, especially them Spelman girls. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. First of all, they acted like we were rock stars.
Because y'all are.
Yeah. Definitely are.
They were just off the chain when we came out. Then one girl said, Miss Charnel, I want to thank you for being a presence for dark-skinned girls. Mm. Mm-hmm. Miss Jasmine, thank you for showing me confidence. Mm. And Miss Cree, thank you for being the oddball. Mm-hmm. That was her.
There you go. Thank you, Jess.
Yeah.
She was saying, I see you, and you help me see me. And you don't know you're doing all that when you're just playing your role, you know? Mm-hmm. But I know Debbie knew. I knew Debbie knew what she was doing when she hired Cree and Charnel that mm-hmm. second season. Mm-hmm. It was very deliberate.
I was just talking about Charnel and him. Mm-hmm. I was, yeah.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
Because I was saying,
we had a whole conversation about who's the most beautiful on A Different World, mm-hmm. and you know, yeah. it turned into that. I was like, man, Kimberly Reese was the one.
She was the one. Yeah.
You think there should be another show, or maybe they should relaunch it? And the reason is, last time I told you, the reason I went to college in HBCU in Hampton was because I seen A Different World, and I wanted that experience coming from Queens, right? I was like, I want that. I don't know if people see that anymore, if they see what a college looks like in the experience, and not just, you know, the partying, but real life, real situations and everything going on. I think that's missing.
It is not there. And I thought when we did, you know, because when I did A Different World, we were coming off school days. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, months in between the project. So it felt like we were a part of a wave. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that it crested and was over. Because Fox started with Rock Dutton's show, Sinbad's show, mm-hmm. Even, you know, before Martin. And once they got launched, they dropped those black shows. Same with CW. You saw mm-hmm. what happened with the mm-hmm. game. But I thought we were part of a new entertainment phase for black people.
Mm. It was a renaissance.
But it was over.
Yeah.
After Cosby left it, they just snatched everybody off. They couldn't wait to get our time slot.
Wow.
Yeah, I've had a lot of conversations about that. I feel like after the 90s, it was intentional and strategic by Hollywood to change the image of black people. I really feel that way.
I think so too, Charlamagne.
It went from great scripted shows where people had jobs and careers to reality television.
Yeah. Where they don't have to pay nobody until you make it big or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now, even with Harlem, and I love that show and I love doing it. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand the streaming thing. Amazon had us for 10 episodes the first season, 8 the second season, this season 6. Mm. So what you're doing, I don't know. We have to do 22 episodes a season. Mm. What you're doing is you can't give anybody long enough work, right? So the writers on a series, they're giving up 4 or 5 months. They're getting paid. But now, 6, that's 2 months work.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't know why they're doing it with Harlem, because people like that show. Mm-hmm, right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it shows Harlem in a beautiful way. It's vibrant and alive, and mm-hmm. it's not gray and boarded up like the Harlem's, like in, you know, it ain't Coolie High and Cornbread Earl and Me, Harlem. Mm. It's a celebration. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why they're not committing. I find it selfish that you don't give a show enough legs to succeed and let Tracy Oliver do what she do.
That's right.
I had so much influence. You know, Jermaine Dupri was here yesterday.
Oh, really?
And on the, mm-hmm. they did a Freaknik documentary.
Oh!
Have you ever been to Freaknik?
No, I was in L.A. during that time, but I've heard about it. They shutting said, down I-20.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of babies made during that.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. They said that actually Different World made Freaknik even bigger. I guess y'all had an episode where the girls talked about going to Freaknik and not telling their parents.
Oh, yeah, the younger crew, like Jada and them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they said that amplified it 1,000%.
Oh,
so many
God.
People were watching Different World. I was like, we're going down to Freaknik.
That's amazing.
That's you causing people to get pregnant.
Uh-uh.
I hope the daddy's paying child support.
Question, Ms. Guy, do you find a sense of vindication in this award at this stage of your career?
No, you know what I felt? I was really surprised at how happy I was when I got it. Mm-hmm. I really felt like I won that award for A Different World in Atlanta.
Wow.
And I say Atlanta because when I got to New York, I had been trained. I had been poured into, you know, with my dance schools, my teachers, the performing arts school I went to, my church, you know. And I also knew that even though I was glad that the show won, you know, Jessica Woosh, I just felt like it was for A Different World.
Mm-hmm.
It's for what nobody, you know, got back then.
You dedicated your award to A Different World. That's the reason why, just because you felt like...
Yeah, I was like, this is ours.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Because mm-hmm. I know what made that show good. And I know we didn't get our props.
That's right.
From white people.
No, that's right.
I mean, no, that's we weren't praised by black people. I have 6 Image Awards.
Yeah.
2 Soul Train Awards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because right. they know what that does. It gives you power in the Hollywood system. Mm-hmm. We're not giving them that. That's so disrespectful to me.
Yeah.
It's not like a person I could cuss out. It's just a cloud of...
system.
White people.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, like, right. white Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because if that show, but just look what they do with Friends and what they did with Living Single. Mm-hmm. Just look at the publicity, how much money they made.
Mm-hmm.
They were at the Golden Globes. They mm-hmm. got movies. Yeah. We are no less talented.
That's right.
And the writing was awesome on A Different World because they're doing... deep subjects, and they have to keep us funny mm-hmm. because the network wanted us funny.
Mm.
They said, well, if we're going to do this AIDS show, how are we going to make it funny? Well, maybe Whitley's going to lose her virginity during what is the B line that's going to not make it so heavy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They have to do that for everything, the riot show. They have to still mix in the humor. And I think we did that well, and that's Susan Fales Hill. I'm so proud of Lena Waithe and Issa Rae, to see them as showrunners and starring and this and that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, they're fierce. Mm-hmm. And I hope they get their props.
But I wonder, how do you think this recognition of the award contributes to the broader conversation about diversity and representation in Hollywood, especially for like OG veteran actresses like yourself who've made significant contributions over the decades?
Okay, so what?
Like, what does this do? Like, the award has to do something, being that Javelin Guy can still be so good at this stage in her career that she's still getting awarded.
Oh, yes, it does feel validating. And I even said when I accepted the award, you know, thank you for keeping me in this community, because the creative community is my world. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whether it's in New York or L.A. or Atlanta, you know, valor my people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the pandemic and then 6-7 months on strike, I'm like, I need to work. I need to be with my people. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I need other creatives. I need stories at lunchtime. And that goes for everybody. That goes for hair, makeup, wardrobe. Everybody is expressing themselves. And there's a spiritual connection to that. So I did feel that way. But it has been good to see my peers, like Regina King, Victoria Mahoney, Sally Richardson, the girls that I was like acting with, doing like directing, and killing it like that. And Tasha Smith directed the last episode I did of Harlem.
Mm-hmm. Love her.
Killed it.
That's a force of nature.
Yeah.
Force of nature.
And loud as all get up. Just loud, ain't she?
That's my girl, though. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gotta be loud sometimes.
We needed it. It was a very long day. Mm-hmm. It was a long shooting day, and her energy was
always high.
Yeah. And what I was so impressed with was her technical acumen. Like, she really knew her cameras. Mm-hmm. She really knew what she wanted. She had to map out a 10-page scene, which is very long for, you know, anything, for movie or TV scene. Yeah. And I don't know, she just did a beautiful job. Mm-hmm. It was the only episode I've done on that show where I saw other people, because all my episodes are with Grace Byers. She's my daughter. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm her mother, I should say. Mm-hmm. And everybody was there at this event. So I got to see Bevy Smith was there. Mm-hmm. Whoopi was there. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it was exciting. I was kind of fanned out too. Yeah,
it's amazing.
I seen a clip that was released from your Uncensored, and it talks about being a mixed child. Was that very difficult in the industry going at that time, where you're going up for auditions and people are saying, "Well, she's not white," or maybe she's not black enough. Was that difficult?
Well, I always defined myself as black, but I didn't get roles because I was too light sometimes, or I got after I left Alvin Ailey. I did musical theater, Broadway and whatnot. And then I started taking acting classes and going out for auditions. And I played three hoes before I got Whitley. I'm just saying. Mm. I asked my agent, I was like, is this normal?
He said, you played three hoes? Like,
yes. Yeah. I played a prostitute on The Equalizer. I played a hoe on Loving, which was a soap opera back then. And then on my third one, I said, okay, is this? And I was nailing them.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yo, I'm hyped. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed down to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with the Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and share it with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You will not want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Whatever it is about me. I got that shit before I got back to my apartment. I was like, okay, right. But
what do you
am
tap
I gonna
into?
Play other things?
Yeah.
What do you tap into to be able to like really play a hoe?
Now what did she tap into?
The way they write it, uh-huh. They usually write. I usually do sarcasm well.
Okay.
And they're usually snarky. You know. Now the other activities, on the equalizer, I was the hoe that they bought for the guy that just came out of prison. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, this scene was nasty, and I'm like surprised, and I come out and I'm supposed to do him because he's just been in prison, mm-hmm. And then in the scene he starts coughing. And I say, you catch something nasty where you been? And he grabs me by the hair and slams me into his knee.
Bringing up his trauma. You triggered him.
I got a little too snarky. But the thing was, man. I didn't know that that should have been blocked. Mm-hmm. I didn't. It was one of my first acting jobs. So because I'm a dancer, I was able to go, you know, slam myself down. Mm-hmm. All he had to do is, you know, and make it look like he was just, and then fall. And I did it over and over, and the director was like, are you okay? It was like, it wasn't until after that I talked to some of my actor friends, and they were like, nobody blocked you? Nobody. Wow. I said, no, it was just like a, you know, a dance move or whatever. But, yeah. Then when I auditioned for Whitley, first of all, they didn't even have her name yet. It was Sydney/Whitney, a Black Southern Belle. I'm like, things that make you go, mm-hmm. A Black Southern Belle. Mm-hmm. Yo no sé. Anyway, she was hitting on her professor for an A in the scene.
She's like, here's go another whole role.
Yeah. Yeah. College. Thank yeah. you. We're ruffles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when I got on the set, now she's a virgin and she doesn't know what's going on in the world. It's just interesting because you play things based on who they tell you you're supposed to be. And then as actors, we often do backstories and you know, make up something that got us to this point, so we have something to lean on. But yeah, I was thinking, well, I guess I'm just gonna be. It wasn't that I was playing a hoe or a prostitute. It was just that I wanted to play all kinds of characters.
Yeah,
I gotta ask.
I've always wanted that.
Yeah,
gotta ask a question. This is a personal question. When you started off dancing as a child, right? Did you know what direction you wanted to go into? So I got two girls that dance, right?
Oh.
And I travel all over the country dancing with these little babies. And, I mean, they are amazing. One won first prize overall.
What?
Seven-year-old. Over 1,000 girls. First prize. But.
What?
Yes. They get busy. They take it serious. 6 days a week. 4 hours a day. Gymnastics. Flipping. Backflip. Dancing.
Wow.
Yes. It's a lot. It's a lot. But I've learned to love it. Like, really enjoy it. But, as a dad, I always think, like, well, what's next after dance? Like, what do you do as a dancer? Like, when you get to high school and college, like, what happens from there? Did you know what you wanted to do going into Alvin Ailey?
When I was a little kid, I thought I just kept asking for more classes. Like, once a week, Saturday, turned into three, turned into five, you know. And when I saw Alvin Ailey and I saw Revelations, I realized that I could do this as a job. I didn't realize that you could dance as a job. Right. Other than be a dance teacher, that's all I was seeing. And I told my daddy, I said, I think I have my calling. I want to dance with Alvin Ailey. So from 12 to 17, that was the trajectory. Mm. Kind of on the level where you are with your girls, because I danced every day after that. I went to performing arts high school. I joined Atlanta Ballet. I went to North Carolina School of the Arts over the summer because I knew that I was not technically proficient enough to get into the Ailey company. But I was also performing. I played Anita in West Side Story, and I was young. I was like 13, and I could already act. And I could sing, but it was that, because, you know, you can't fake dancing. You can either dance or you can't dance.
Right.
I mean, it's an athletic, you know. So that's when I knew. Do they want to do it as a profession?
They don't know right now. One is 7, one is 10, and they just enjoy it, and they want more. And it's not just ballet. It's not just open for mad. It's just, it's everything. It's jazz. It's tap. It's now they just started getting into hip hop. But for me, it's like I enjoy it because I know where they are, right? I know they're not going to want to go to their friend's house. I know they're not going to want to go to the mall because they enjoy it so much. School's over at 2:40. From 3 to 7, they dancing. 7, they come home, do homework, they tie it. And I enjoy it because I like watching them. Like, I'm the, there's not too many dads out there for some reason, but I'm the one that's, I know the routine and I'm spinning with them because I, if they enjoy it, I enjoy it. But it's, I feel like more people, more kids should get into it because it's a great art.
Yeah.
It's a great art.
And it gave me my foundation for everything. Discipline. Being on time.
Confidence.
Like, even when I got a different world, I remember one of our scripties, she came up to me and she said, "Are you a dancer?" And I was just standing there. And I was like, yeah, like, what gave me away?
Monster.
I'm not, what? I was always on time. I was always there waiting for everybody else. I did not understand the way they did it. And all the breaks they take, I'm like, what are we breaking for? We ain't done nothing.
Right.
Dancers are the mules of the business.
Wow.
If the actors are coming out every now and then, if we, like when I did Fame, we were in rehearsal or performing all day, 10 hours. Actors going to trailers and coming back. When we did School Days, you couldn't be in that movie if you couldn't dance, sing, and act, first of all. But that meant we all came from theater. We shot, we filmed, we recorded the song, I Want to Be Alone Tonight, after we filmed that day. And then they said, okay, now you're going to the studio. And we went, and we learned the song and did it. And then we learned the choreography and performed it.
Damn.
But that's how we do, especially in New York and especially in theater. All my dancing friends can sing and act. All my acting friends can dance and sing. We had to be triple threats to continue to work. You think them divas from Dreamgirls, Loretta Devine, Shirley Ralph, Jennifer Lewis, you built for it, you know. So when we go out there, we're not even asked to work at our full potential. You know what I mean? And your babies are going to be like that too. In whatever they do. Because that kind of training is like an athlete.
I want to talk about another training you probably got. Because, you know, you carry yourself with a certain sense of regalness, right? And when you look at Debbie Allen, when you look at Felicia Rashad, they have that same regal energy. What did those two teach you?
Oh, my gosh. Everything, I mean, Debbie was ahead of me, so every time people told me, well, you're mostly a dancer, we don't know about you acting, or you're a comic actress, we don't know about you doing drama. In my mind, I go, Debbie did. I just let them tell me what they thought I couldn't do. And it wasn't just that I knew I could. She's already done it. She just did it. She had two lines in the Fame movie. When you see her next, she's directing, choreographing the show. She's producing. You can't let other people tell you what you can do. You don't know. And the other mantra I always had, especially like when people were certain choreographers, you know, it's not a nice world, the dance world. So they're reading me or cussing me out, whatever, and I would say, you don't know, you're not God. All I, in my mind. So I wouldn't cry. Because I was like, don't you stand up here and let him make you cry. Because he's saying, you know, you think you're something, you'll never be anything. And I was like, you don't know, you're not God.
That's right.
How you going to proclaim my destiny?
That's right.
You know? So you have to be able to talk to yourself. And Debbie is the same way. Felicia's the same way. They have a sense of self. Because Debbie told me about how they rejected her at North Carolina School of the Arts because she didn't have a body for dance. Because she got a booty and whatever. And she said, and I took this booty all the way to Broadway, darling. You know, okay, you don't want me in your school? Well, I'm going to go to Howard. And then I'm going to be on Broadway. And then, and then, and then. You can't let other people tell you what you are and what you're not. And I refuse that. I refuse that on just a general level. Like, there were little dancers in my class that were great dancers, but a little chunky or whatever. And I heard how the teachers talked to them, destroying them. How dare you? Right. How dare you take your responsibility and do that to her? You don't know what she's going to be. And you're only going to go with skinny, tall people? I just don't like that. If you're going to teach kids an art form, don't add your bitter two cents to it. Because you didn't with your fat ass.
That's not politically correct. The politically correct term is big back.
No, it's not. Don't. It's big back. We just...
Big back. Do women say that, or is that a male term? No,
Charlamagne brought that up. No, he actually discovered that.
I'm not saying big back.
Yeah, he developed that term.
Big back sounds better than fat ass.
It sounds like a dude term.
Yeah, a dude, that dude right there.
Now they really going to think I'm gay.
He discovered.
I'm like, oh, that baby got big back.
We've been canceled.
That's not gonna sound right coming from us.
That's not a rumor I heard that you were gay. I didn't hear that before. Where did that start?
It just comes up every now and then. If they don't see me with a man, like when I was at an Oscar party at George's, and I was dancing with Debbie, and all the fame dancers were there. Like you know, she keeps all her people. They got me, you know, photo of the week. Me and Debbie, and they talking about me in the hair salon. I knew it. I think they together. And Norm calls me. He loved it. I said, well, I'm single. I don't like that. He's like, yeah, that's some funny shit. I said, funny for you? Because you're like, yeah, I'm with Debbie and she's with Jasmine? Mm-mm. Then it came up when I was at Ailey's. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what it is. I don't care, but it's just, I don't want to have to undo it. Yeah, and then in New York, I got hit on and stuff, and I was like, okay, but what made you think that I like girls? Because it won't bother me. You know, I was just developing into my womanhood.
It was about some studs. You got hit on by some studs.
So what? Maybe it's the Timberlands.
Yeah, maybe it's studs.
I didn't have Timberlands then. I was at Cafe Wa. All
right.
And it was funk night. And I would go there by myself sometimes. You can't always have somebody come with you, you know. And so sometimes I think it's because I'm alone. Mm-hmm. And then my best friend at Ailey's, we were walking through the park, and unbeknownst to us, we were walking in the wooded gay area.
I don't know what you call it.
A glen, a valley,
the gay section with shade.
Okay. And they stepped to you.
Well, somebody saw us there.
Oh,
and
man.
We didn't know we were in a certain area or whatever. Because I don't know. Mm. And then when I got back to the school, they were like, you know, they're saying that you and so-and-so are. I was like, I don't even have a boyfriend. How can I have a girlfriend?
Okay.
Like, I can't even work, you know.
Right.
It doesn't bother me, but when I was younger, it did because I was still developing.
Mm-hmm. And they was pulling up on you.
I was developing as a young woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww.
Would you ever do a memoir? We know you got the Uncensored coming out this weekend, but would you ever do a memoir?
I would need some help. You know, I would just need some help. I can't write it myself, by myself.
Oh, yeah. Most people get help with their memoir. Yeah, yeah. Because I loved reading Jada Pinkett's book, Worthy, because like, you know, Envy was saying earlier, and you were saying it was such a privacy in the 90s. So to get those stories from that era when she talks about you and, you know, Pac and just y'all friendship, just that friendship of Black Hollywood. It's just like, man.
And now I was like privileged enough to hang with them because they're so much younger than me, you know, and it was just easy. Mm-hmm. You know, her birthday party and we went to the Dragonfly, which was funk night that night.
Oh, Gaze was in there too that night.
I like me some funk, obviously. I'm like, it's funk night at a Dragonfly. But, and, you know, accepting of me because, I think, how old is Jada, 50?
I don't know. Let me look it up.
I think, well, I'm 62, so when I'm on the show, I'm 25, 26, 27. They 18, 19.
Mm. She's 52.
Creep. Yeah. Mm. So now it's not a big deal, but back then I wasn't hanging out with no, you know. I remember I went to a restaurant with Cree, and as we were walking to the restaurant, she said, "Do they card?" I said, "Card?" Mm-hmm. I mean, I had never been carded because 18, you know. Mm-hmm. I said, "How old are you?" She said, "I just turned 18." I said, "What the hell am I doing hanging out with an 18-year-old? Yeah. Are you kidding me?"
Yeah.
Kadeem, too. Mm-hmm. I saw them as kids. Mm-hmm. I like grown-ass men when I was young. Mm-hmm. 30, 32.
Right.
So that, you know, I was like 18.
Yeah.
But now that they have embraced me, I appreciate it.
Right.
Because they kept me current. And kept me interested because they, Jada and Cree, are out-the-box thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they bring creative ideas to the table that I never would have thought of.
Right.
And I love that. And of course, you know, Cree keeps me laughing.
What about Pac?
Pac and I would like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
He always had ideas. I felt so unaccomplished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he would say something and then do it. I would tell him an idea and not write it and not finish it, mm-hmm. or it's still, like, on my shelf. Mostly I wanted him to know that I felt he was a great actor, and I heard the murmurings of, oh, he's just being himself or whatever. They're just riding on his fame as a rapper. I said, everybody that raps ain't acting on there. There were a lot of rappers that had movies.
Mm-hmm.
That man can act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, his performances were off the chain. And I just wanted him to know that and not listen to that. One time in Newsweek, they used to have little blurbs like Star of the Week or Celebrity of the Week. Just a little blurb.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "And surprisingly handsome rapper." I said, "What the fuck is so surprising?
Surprisingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How insulting."
Yeah, he was fine as shit.
It was, I mean.
sorry, girl, yes.
Why is that surprising?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be ugly because he's a rapper? I found it racist.
Mm.
Then when I won one of my image awards and I go to the press tent, there were two little white girls there, and all they did was ask me about what I felt about Tupac getting an image award. Now, meanwhile, I have my award. It's my sixth one, and I'm not even prepared to, you know how they like to bring up dirt when you had a red carpet. And I was thinking, what are y'all doing here? This is our party, you know? And you're crashing our party and asking me to tell some dirt about somebody else here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't in the most receiving way. They kept asking me if I thought he deserved an image award. And I said, well, I don't know what the controversy is. Well, you know, because of Dolores Tucker and this, that, and the other. And I didn't know. And I said, well, can you tell me which songs you're referring to? At the time, I had only heard Dear Mama, Brenda Had a Baby, and Keep Your Head Up.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly didn't know what the controversy was about because these are all uplifting female.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I don't know which song. I haven't heard the CD. I said, well, why don't you do your homework and then come to me and ask me?
Right.
I was so mad. And in the back of the house, there were two brothers like this. They were from Jet and Ebony. You know? Because I'm like, how dare you come to our party, insult our guest, and don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
That's right.
But I'm supposed to know?
Mm-hmm.
They were on the radio, those three songs.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in like they, well, we deserve that. We deserve to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, I was so glad. So the next day I was in the L.A. Times. I have my award up like this, and my nostrils
flaring.
And I don't know what they said, but my publicist called me, and she was like, you know, there are white actresses that don't get hired because their breasts are too big. I was like, first of all, I don't have to run everything by you for me to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted to be by my side, you should have been by there. Yeah. But what was she going to do? Interrupt mm-hmm. me? You disrespecting us. Mm-hmm. You disrespecting me. Mm-hmm. And the Feeney saw that article and heard that I stood up for him.
Mm-hmm.
And she never forgot that. And I think that's part of why she was cool with him staying with me.
After you got shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because she didn't, based on what they knew about me and seeing me on the show, she didn't realize that I was like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And they're very much soldiers in that. Mm. One of her friends said, oh, you a soldier now. And I was like, I'm sorry, are we at war? I didn't know what she meant by it.
Were you afraid during that time? Like when you took Pac in after he got shot, did you feel like, what if they come looking for him and I'm
there,
here.
Yeah, there were times because of the regularity of my going in and out of my apartment. Mm-hmm. I felt like it would be easy if I had been on the radar for anybody to, you know, follow me mm-hmm. or come up. And so there was that. And I didn't live in a secured building, like a doorman building. Mm-hmm. And I was scared of, like I had never seen a real bullet wound, just, you know, on TV, like NYPD Blue and when I played a badass in this movie. But I was concerned about that, you know, actually caring for the wounds and making sure he was going
to
be okay.
So you had to nurse him, back into
Yeah, he should have been in the hospital for at least two or three more days on antibiotics.
I remember he just walked out. He signed himself out. So you had to help him out and help Meade and help him get himself back together.
Well, when he left Bellevue, he went to his girlfriend's and he realized it was equally accessible. He just felt like a sitting duck in the hospital. Mm. But everybody knew he was at his girlfriend's. Nobody knew that we were friends. So him coming to my apartment was more
like discreet.
Diary of Anne Frank.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I just put food under the bookcase.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was on the down low. I didn't know what kind of publicity might have come from that, but it wasn't anything I was interested in publicizing, so I just shut the family down. I was like, did you tell anybody where you spend? Don't you know? Because I didn't do that for that reason. It was a personal reason.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of those moments where, you know, y'all don't get that.
Yeah.
And they respected it all these years until the documentary. They've been wanting to, I guess, thank me. But their love, and I'm part of that family now, has been enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need public thanks for what I did on a personal level.
That's right.
So, it's interesting. The documentary said, okay, Jasmine, you can talk about that part of it now. Because I really thought, well, I'll just, you know, I'll go to my grave with certain things.
Yeah.
Not because I'm ashamed, but I don't like the exploitation factor of things that you do in your personal life for your kids or for people you love or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's your story? I mean, they said in the doc, Jada talked about it in her book.
This
is all y'all story.
She called me and told me what was in the book.
Mm-hmm.
This is all I said. I didn't talk about this. I didn't talk about that. And I really was calling her more for support because when I wrote a Feeney's book, I didn't know all the other stuff you have to do for a book.
Mm-hmm.
The preface, the book tours, you know. And I just wanted to make sure she was. And there was a kind of loneliness to her story to me.
To a Feeney?
No, Jada.
Jada, okay, gotcha. Yeah, I can see that.
There's a loneliness, like the bigger and richer and you get more isolated.
Mm.
You know, there's more things you can't do, and you always have to, I don't know. So I just didn't want her to feel that loneliness. She could talk to me about whatever, because that was some, it was a lot of personal information.
Yeah,
that one, like, those times you
her gauge is way past mine. That's what I mean about the younger ones. Mm-hmm. They showed me that I don't have to be that old school about my privacy. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So you didn't say, you know, when Tupac stayed with you, you saw that alopecia. Like, you ain't going to go in it like that.
I didn't tell nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, when my family saw the documentary, my best friend said, "What?" Mm-hmm. I told two people, and they both lived in New York, because why tell somebody that can't get to me? Because I was worried that anything could happen, you know?
Yeah.
And those two of my friends that lived in New York, that was it. So all my other friends, I just, because 2 weeks isn't a long period for me not to call you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't missed yet. You know, maybe had it been a month.
Right.
Yeah. Gotcha. So now when that documentary came out, a lot of my friends were like,
"Whoa, that's where you was at for that 2 weeks.
When did this happen? Yeah. Where were you staying? Mm-hmm. How come I didn't know?"
Did his girlfriend at the time have a problem with that? I mean, because that's Pac.
I don't know.
And Jasmine guy. So, I, you know.
I have no idea, child. I wasn't dealing with
that. I don't care at all.
He's 21. You know what I mean? I'm not like, your girlfriend going to... And it was dire. It was, I mean, he was in trouble.
Yeah.
And he was still open. Like, it wasn't healed yet, you know? So I wasn't thinking about that.
Yeah.
Well, they got back together, I think.
Mm-hmm. They got back together?
Yeah, I'm sure you talk about this on Uncensored. And this is my last question. Like, when was the last time you spoke to him?
Tupac?
Yeah. Ooh. Like, before he died. Do you remember the last conversation y'all had? Or last time you saw him?
I was visiting a Fainey in Stone Mountain when they had a house there. And he came through. Now, this is after he had been in prison for 11 months.
Okay.
So I hadn't seen him for a while. Okay. Yeah, so I saw him at the house. That was the last time.
You remember the conversation, or you don't? That's personal.
It was just like, hey, you know, and he was just like, I'm strong now, because he was, you know, infirmed. Mm-hmm. So he wanted me to see his, you know, little prison push-up muscles and whatnot. Knuckles were all black from doing it on, you know, he wanted, I was like, yeah, you look good. Mm-hmm. And then he went out with his friends, and, you know, I hung out with the Fainey. The thing that really hurt my feelings about him getting shot like that, when he was with me, I thought I was helping him go to the next part of his life.
Like, grow, evolve, yeah.
I was like, you're gonna go to prison and then get shot again? And I knew that second shooting wasn't... The wounds he had the first time were in his appendages, not in his lungs. I was so disappointed.
Yeah.
You live and up. He told me he wasn't gonna make it past 25. I always thought he was just talking shit all the time. Mm-hmm. That's legend. Put that in the book. I was like, nigga, I'm not writing a book about you. Stop telling me that. I'd be like, I'm never telling anybody anything about this experience. Mm-hmm. Nah, you need to, you know, blunt in the bathtub. Like, you need to put this in the book. What am I? You're fucking... now I'm your chronicler.
Yeah.
And he kept telling me. He was like 21. And I really didn't understand that world. Mm-hmm. He knew I wasn't from it. I thought it was ridiculous for him to say he wasn't going to live past 25. Mm-hmm. I treated him like I treated my little cousins that make these statements about life.
Yeah.
So that hurt.
Can't wait people to hear your story.
You yeah. lived a life, Miss Guy. Uncensored. Y'all got to watch Uncensored this Sunday.
Sunday, March 24th. But you need to write a book. Central TV 1.
Y'all going to make me, I'm going to take my lashes off because I'm going to the airport.
Leave them here.
They on. They
I'm going to put them on eBay.
Are they still yes, on? Because I'm playing with lashes.
If you take them off, I'm putting them on eBay.
No, I got you. I'm watching. They on.
Make they sure on. They know it's not roaches or a spider because they look like bugs when you just put them on
ball
the couch.
Ball them out. No,
they oh, that's on my lashes.
Well, Jasmine Guy, ladies
man,
and gentlemen,
always a pleasure
you
when
so
you
much.
Come, Ms. Guy. We
thank
love you so much.
Love you.
You are a cultural icon. We appreciate that's you right. so much. We value you. Just thank you always.
That's
thank
right.
you.
It's Jasmine Guy. It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.